by which we say that Islam, that Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, has been successful. Even if we take the materialistic Western standards, if you look at the way this country has developed, you know, materially, in terms of infrastructure, in terms of education, in terms of having an educated and you know, capable population, in terms of its scientific achievements, in terms of its medical achievements, all the, even if you take those, you will see that Imam's way was successful and led to the betterment of the life of tens of millions of people.
Thank you for that, Dr. Mahdi Tarawi, a very valuable contribution today on the program. And it only leaves me to say, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. May the peace and mercy and blessings of Allah be upon you all. Thank you very much for listening today, and goodbye.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
The Light.
A small New Hampshire town has been hit by a series of car break-ins over the last few weeks. People were shocked when they finally discovered the mischievous criminal. A large black bear has been identified as the bandit wreaking havoc in the town of Thornton. The naughty mammal was caught on camera as it got on its two hind legs and skillfully opened the door of a car. Police say the bear was most likely rummaging for food. Authorities have asked people to remove food from their cars to avoid enticing the troublesome animal. A Jordanian woman is receiving high demands for the soap she produces. Why? Because she uses an unusual ingredient. Lara Altiti makes soap out of camel milk. She tours different cities in Jordan to find the best camel farms for her business. Titi uses camel milk as the major ingredient for the soap she produces. That's because she says it has rich benefits and contains more vitamins than cow milks.
The first stage includes weighing the soap, and I include different kinds of oil to preserve the quality of the soap and its therapeutic benefit. We need to have high foam and tough consistency, and we don't want it to be rancid. We place high importance on the therapeutic material that we add during the production process.
Titi started her soap line at home using a manual process and then expanded it to an independent workshop. Her soap line has now become very popular in Jordan. Titi produces more than 4,000 soap bars a month. She sells them both to domestic and international customers.
If you're a car lover, this story is for you. Over 300 classic vehicles have taken part in a retro rally across Estonia. The 1,000-kilometer rally kicked off in the town of Perde. It drew participants from Latvia and Finland. Their motto is Straight Ahead to the Past. The vintage cars participated in the event are mostly produced between 1930 and 1980. Experts say all the vehicles are in good condition. However, they doubt if all the vehicles can make it to the end of the five-day rally.
The German firm's electric air taxi takes its first flight at a show in an airport near the French capital, Paris. Volocopter's flying taxi, which looks like a tiny helicopter, took off and landed vertically over the airport with no passenger on board during a three-minute trial. Aside from its two-passenger capacity, the aircraft also has some room for luggage. It flew a 500-meter route at speeds of up to 30 kilometers per hour and 30 meters high along the airfield. The flying taxi service would first be operated by a licensed pilot, but the flight would be fully automated over a period of time.
With respect to regulation, initially we will have a fully certified, fully licensed helicopter pilot just to fit into existing regulation. But we believe over time it can be much simpler to obtain such an operating license for a volocopter. And of course, in the last instance, we want to take a pilot requirement out, and we want these vehicles to fly fully automated. So you will not need a pilot license anymore. You can just summon the Volocopter. It will come and pick you up and bring you safely to your destination.
The German firm is entering the urban mobility market with high hopes of playing a major role in the infant industry. Volocopter says its objective is to have a service in operation for 2024 for the 2024 Olympic Games. Walking around the city without shoes can be delightful. If you're interested in the experience, visit the Russian capital. A 3.5-kilometer long barefoot trail has recently opened in Moscow's Elk Island Park. It's made of various materials such as pine bark, beach pebbles, and clay. Taking around 40 minutes to complete, the path attracts hundreds of visitors every day. However, some people find it difficult to walk without shoes, calling the path a torture trail. A zoo in Turkey has welcomed a baby elephant from an endangered species. The birth of a female calf at Izmir Wildlife Park has caused excitement in keepers and visitors. The calf, yet to be named, is the third offspring of parents from Asian species. The International Union for the Conservation of Nature classifies the Asian elephant as endangered due to their rapid decline in the wild. The Asian elephants are primarily threatened by poaching, fragmentation, and loss and degradation of habitat. Currently, around 20 to 40,000 Asian elephants are living across the world, five of which inhabiting Turkey's Izmir Zoo.
Palestinian artist has come up with the idea of making children feel happy after the recent Israeli aggression on the besieged Gaza Strip left many people dead. Amna Sami is a young Palestinian artist who has gathered Palestinian kids in the city of Beit Lahia, north of Gaza. That's where houses were destroyed by Israeli airstrikes and bombings during the recent aggression on the territory. Sami draws the Palestinian flag as well as the map of Palestine on children's cheeks as patriotic symbols. She says she does that to say that these people in the midst of destruction will become strong again. Sami says by painting on kids' faces, she wants to send a message to the world.
I'm sending a message to the world that our children should live like other children in the world, away from danger and destruction. It is their right in life to live as children in a safe place, a place that gives them something to live a normal life.
Palestinian kids say they feel happy when Sami paints their faces. The Israeli regime launched its devastating onslaught on Gaza in early May. At least 256 Palestinians, including 66 children, were killed during the 11-day war. A Turkish band has found musical inspiration in a most unlikely place, a local landfill. Here's more. Members of Funk Istanbul have assembled instruments from the dump in a junkyard in Istanbul. They use their ingenious new tools to play Turkish folk music. The band aims to raise awareness about recycling. Turkey is one of the biggest producers of municipal waste globally. The country has a low recycling rate. Only 12% of waste is repurposed there.
Technology has come in handy to rescue animals in disaster zones. American cinematographer Douglas Thron has used a high-tech infrared drone to save animals from fire or storm, or even those who are stuck in trees. The drone he uses has a large thermal camera, a spotlight, and zoom lens. The good point is that the aerial vehicle does not make too much noise, therefore it does not scare away animals.
So what I do is I fly infrared drones primarily at night over disaster areas after a hurricane or a fire hits, and I look for people's pets, whether it be cats or dogs, and I also look for injured wildlife. And then either I or rescue crews will go in and rescue the animals after I spot the animals after these natural disasters.
Thron has so far rescued hundreds of stranded animals in various places in the US and Australia. Emergency services have allowed him to participate in rescue efforts after making sure that the drone works well to achieve its goal.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
A video has gone viral showing animals at a U.S. zoo enjoying their bath time becoming clean as a new pimp. Keepers at Chicago's Brookfield Zoo washed the animals to celebrate International Bath Day. From anteaters to rhinos all got sprayed with a water hose. They seemed to love their bath time as it kept them cool in the summer heat. Zoo officials say the occasion is to honor ancient Greek scientist Archimedes, who made a discovery while in the bath. You might be pleased to know life is going back to normal as countries around the world are easing coronavirus restrictions. Disneyland in the French capital, Paris, is saying bonjour to visitors once again with all necessary precautions. Bet everyone missed that. The theme park reopened its doors to the public with limited tickets and an online reservation system. All visitors over 6 years old are required to wear face masks and to observe social distancing guidelines. New attractions, including a hotel and various car rides, are also available for guests. Disneyland Paris was shut for over 7 months due to rising COVID-19 infections. This is the first time since January 2020 that all the six Disney resorts are open. Children have their own ways of remembering the dead. In Gaza, Palestinian kids fly kites in memory of their peers who lost their lives in the recent Israeli onslaught. Dozens of kids participated in the event, holding kites bearing the pictures of 66 little victims. According to the organizers, the goal was to send a message to people around the world that Palestinian kids have the right to live a free and happy life. The children said their dream is to fly in the sky without any restrictions or wars. A herd of wild Asian elephants in China has turned into international stars after leaving their natural habitat in Yunnan province. The herd of 15 elephants is said to have left home in southwest China 15 months ago, but it was in April when they grabbed officials' attention after they were spotted by locals. The elephants have so far trekked nearly 500 kilometers across the country. They have traveled through villages and towns and even stopped for a rest. Local authorities have welcomed these mammoth travelers with treats of sweet corn and bananas. They are monitoring the elephants' movements with drones while keeping them away from residential areas.
Chinese grandma has given a dazzling display of her masterly kung fu performance at a martial arts competition. The 98-year-old woman and her son took the stage as a curtain raiser to the event. The duo put on a kung fu show before a large crowd of spectators who were impressed by her skillful gestures. She was invited to the competition to act as a judge.
I started practicing martial arts when I was only five. I would box every day, learning movements like chopping, pushing palm, and thrusting palm. Though I am old now, my strength hasn't gone.
Zhang says she's inherited her family's martial arts. She's rumored to have a sense of justice from a very young age and try to help others, which earned her quite a reputation where she lives. Traditional martial arts have been passed down in the Zhongqing village located in Zhejiang province for 500 years. Go to Italy, where Mount Etna has put on an eye-catching show with its spectacular eruptions. Red-hot lava fountains and plumes of smoke spewed up into the sky. The main eruption was located at the southeastern crater of the volcano. Mount Etna is Europe's tallest active volcano. It's located above the Sicilian town of Catania. It often erupts but rarely causes damage. However, nearby residents have to deal with ash showers. Geological studies show that Mount Etna has been active for more than 2 million years now. Egypt has opened its first archaeological replica factory in an attempt to promote its culture worldwide. The factory was inaugurated in response to people's demand for having detailed copies of ancient treasures. So far, over 6,400 high-quality replicas of ancient Egyptian artifacts have been produced. More than 150 artists work to make the goods out of stone, wood, and even gold.
The materials with which these are made are high quality. The highest and most elegant materials are being used to make these samples, and the materials are very close to those used to make the original artifacts.
The models have certificates showing that they are identical copies of the original artifacts. Each replica also has a barcode that provides extra information about the item. The factory is located in Qayyubah, about 35 kilometers northeast of the capital, Cairo. Now, a lot of people don't like rats and find them disgusting most of the time. However, the rodents are doing life-saving work in Cambodia. Now, the Southeast Asian nation has deployed a new squad of African giant pouched rats to sniff out old landmines. The new recruits have shown an exceptional ability at their task, with their handlers claiming 100% accuracy. There are now nearly 50 demining rats working in the field in Cambodia. The country started using the animal services in 2016, and they have helped detect and clear hundreds of landmines since. Last year, an especially heroic rat called Magawa attracted global fame after receiving a gold medal for his work. The hero rat, who is now retired, detected over 71 landmines.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
the limelight.
Commissioners have found that both U.S. laws and police practices, as documented in the 44 cases heard by the commissioners and national data, do not comply with the international standards on the use of force, says Marjorie Kahnreiter in an article titled, Commission Finds Anti-Black Police Violence in U.S. Constitutes Crimes Against Humanity. Stay tuned for the details, please. The International Commission of Inquiry on Systematic Racist Police Violence Against People of African Descent in the United States of America issued its long-awaited report on the U.S.'s police-perpetrated racist violence. The commissioners concluded that the systematic police killings of black people in the U.S. constitutes a prima facie case of crimes against humanity, and they asked the prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, ICC, to initiate an investigation of responsible police officials. These crimes against humanity under the ICC's Rome Statute include murder, severe deprivation of physical liberty, torture, persecution of people of African descent, and inhuman acts causing great suffering or serious injury to body or mental or physical health. All of the crimes occurred in the context of a widespread or systematic attack directed against the civilian population of black people in the United States, as documented by the findings of fact in a 188-page report. The 12 commissioners are eminent experts and jurists from Asia, Africa, Latin America, Europe, and the Caribbean. After 18 days of hearings and extensive research, the commissioner found that both U.S. law and police practices do not comply with international law. Testimony of family members, attorneys, activists, and experts about police killings of 43 black people and the paralyzing of another was presented to the commissioners. All of the victims were unarmed or were not threatening the officers or others. Philanois Floyd, brother of George Floyd, testified before the commissioners. At a press conference announcing the release of the report, he said, I want to thank the commissioner for recognizing my humanity as a good black man in America and for recognizing my brother George's humanity and the humanity of other families across this nation, and bringing to light and acknowledging the United States government is perpetrating crimes against humanity against black people in the United States. This finding of crimes against humanity was not given lightly. We included it with a very clear mind, Commissioner Hina Jilani from Pakistan told The Guardian. We examined all the facts and concluded that there are situations in the U.S. that beg the urgent scrutiny of the ICC. The commissioners made the following findings of fact. Pretextual traffic stops are a common precursor to police killings and uses of excessive force against people of African descent. Tavis Crane was killed by police after his young daughter threw a piece of candy out of the window. Race-based street stops, known as a stop and frisk, often trigger the use of deadly force by police. Eric Garner was suspected of selling individual untaxed cigarettes. George Floyd was suspected of using a counterfeit $20 bill. Fourth Amendment violations invariably lead to the use of excessive force and police killings of black people. Breonna Taylor was killed following the execution of a no-knock warrant after a judge had replaced it with a knock warrant. Police routinely use excessive and lethal restraints against black people. They include tasers, chokeholds, compression, asphyxia, rough rides, and the use of vehicles as deadly weapons. George Floyd died from asphyxia. Freddie Gray was taken on a 45-minute rough ride, resulting in his death. Lethal police violence against black people is exacerbated by officers' failure to provide medical attention. For example, Andrew Kurtz was kept in the back of a squad car for 17 minutes as he begged for help, repeating, "I can't breathe." He died of a heart attack in the car. Lethal police violence against black people experiencing a mental health crisis is systematic. After Daniel Pruitt's family called police to provide mental health assistance, he was walking naked in the street. The officers put a spit hood over his head after he began spitting. They held him face down on the pavement for 2 minutes and 15 seconds, and he stopped breathing. Systematic racist police violence kills and traumatizes black children and youth. 12-year-old Tammy Rice was shot to death by police as he played in a park with a toy gun. The young children of Jacob Blake witnessed their father being shot and paralyzed by police. And racist police violence traumatizes and devastates families and communities across the U.S. Manuel Elijah Elise was hit, punched, choked, and tasered to death by American police. Black immigrants are particularly vulnerable to systematic racist police violence and police killings. Madam Jean, born in St. Lucia, was eating ice cream in his apartment when an officer walked in, mistakenly thinking it was hers, and shot him dead. What was she defending? Allison Jean, Madam Jean's mother, asked, as the only weapon he held was the color of his skin. Legal actors are complicit in police violence and killings of black people through qualified immunity and systematic impunity of officers. Police officers in the United States enjoy impunity for their racist violence. They're rarely held accountable for killing black people, and qualified immunity protects them against liability for violation of constitutional rights. Alarming pattern of destruction and manipulation of evidence corrupts and obstruction of justice. Prosecutors have a conflict of interest, and medical examiners often do the bidding of police. After Darren Wilson killed Michael Brown, as Brown raised his hands and said, "Don't shoot," the officer backed his own gun and washed Brown's blood off his hands. After police killed Henry Glover, the officers burned the car with his body in it. Prosecutional misconduct and grand jury abuse. The offending officers testified at the grand juries in the killings of both Michael Brown and Tammy Rice, and in neither case was the officer cross-examined. There were no incitements of officers in either case. Systematic impunity and lack of oversight by police. Internal affairs investigations invariably exonerate officers. Police can't be trusted to police themselves. The blue wall of silence keeps officers from reporting misconduct by fellow officers. Police unions facilitate impunity of officers. The police union got the body camera footage a few days after the killing of Daniel Pruitt, but it took the Pruitt family 6 months to get it, and only after they filed several lawsuits. And qualified immunity. A recent U.S. District Court judge wrote, "Judges have invented a legal doctrine to protect law enforcement officers from having to face any consequences for wrongdoing." The doctrine is called qualified immunity. In real life, it operates like absolute immunity. In case after case heard by the commissioners, victims' families face extraordinary obstacles to holding officers accountable for the killing of their family members. The commissioners found that systematic racist police violence against people of African descent in the United States of America has resulted in a pattern of gross and reliably attested violations of human rights and fundamental freedoms. These include violations of the right to life, the right to liberty and security, the right to mental health, the right to be free from arbitrary detention, and the right to be free from torture and other cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatments, including by the use of tasers, chokeholds, and compression asphyxia. The U.S. torture statute only punishes torture committed abroad. The commissioners also found violations of the right to be free from discrimination based on race, gender, disability, or status as a child. The stop and frisk doctrine is an invitation for racial profiling, and the Supreme Court allows pretextual stops for traffic violations even when the officer is motivated by racism in violation of international law. In addition, the commissioners found violations of the right to a fair trial and the presumption of innocence, which constitute extrajudicial killings, as well as the right to be treated with humanity and respect. The commissioners found violations of the duty to provide medical care to detained persons, to ensure investigations of extrajudicial killings that are independent, competent, thorough, and effective, and to prosecute suspects and punish perpetrators to ensure they are held accountable. The commissioners found that both U.S. laws and police practices, as documented in the 44 cases heard by the commissioners and national data, do not comply with the international standards on the use of force.
On June 10, a political prisoner serving a life sentence in Bahrain died after contracting COVID-19. The tiny kingdom in the Persian Gulf has come under pressure from human rights organizations over poor prison conditions. Since the March outbreak of the disease in Bahrain's main prison, Jau, families have been holding protests demanding the release of political prisoners and better conditions, all in vain. The 48-year-old prisoner, a Shia Muslim, was taken from prison to Salmania Hospital on May 29 and was placed on a ventilator in an ICU unit. Shortly after, he slipped into a coma and died a few days later. Hossein Barakat was sentenced in 2018, along with 53 other individuals, to life in prison in a mass trial of 138 Bahraini citizens due to their opposition to the regime's decades-old discrimination and tyranny. He was also stripped of his citizenship, which was later restored by royal decree. Reportedly, there were 15 prisoners in Barakat's cell, which had only 10 beds, hence some of the inmates had to sleep on the floor. Bahraini human rights activist Mariam Khawaja, whose own father is imprisoned in Jau, said Barakat told his wife during his last phone call that he could not breathe and was going to die.
The fact is, since the outbreak of the coronavirus inside Bahrain prisons, preventative measures inside prisons have not been implemented, and the authorities continue the policy of deliberate medical neglect.
They are known for their unhealthy environment and lack of basic necessities, especially at this dire time and at this crucial time of the pandemic outbreak. And those prisoners, as we know, normal patients, the people who are outside the prison suffer a lot. So what about those who are in prison, who already are suffering?
Meanwhile, dissolved Bahraini opposition group Al-Wafaq has been calling for the release of prisoners of conscience since the start of the pandemic. According to Americans for Democracy and Human Rights in Bahrain, a second outbreak at Jao began on the 22nd of May and has infected an estimated 60% of the 255 political prisoners housed at Building 12 of the prison. An earlier outbreak in March saw at least 140 inmates infected with the virus. Bird estimates that the total number of COVID cases in both Jao and the Dry Dock Detention Center has far exceeded 200 cases since March.
This, of course, amounts to a deliberate killing, to a political assassination, as if the government of Bahrain, if not murdering those prisoners during torture, during executions, it's now dealing with the outbreak of the coronavirus pandemic as an opportunity to revenge against those political prisoners, merely because those political prisoners, those peaceful protesters, political activists, human rights defenders, clerics.
Speaking from inside the Dry Dock Detention Center, inmate Ali Al-Haji said most prisoners are mistreated, physically and mentally. It's always the same thing, torture and a lack of proper medical care. Particular concern has been raised about the aging leaders of the 2011 pro-democracy uprising, including Hassan Moshema, who is in his 80s and suffers serious health conditions, placing him at high risk from coronavirus.
The only crime of those political prisoners is that they have called for an elected government, for a constitutional monarchy, for a new constitution which guarantees their rights, their freedoms, which tolerates all citizens equally.
In the words of Hussein Abdullah, executive director of ADHRB, following this tragic death, the Biden administration and the UK government must make clear to their Bahraini allies that holding political opponents as hostages will no longer be tolerated.
The Bahraini government deals with the political prisoners, more than 3,000 political prisoners, as hostages. It neglects their rights merely because those people have once took to the streets and called for their basic freedoms, their basic rights. So it's the same practice, as the practices of the Zionist occupiers against the Palestinians. They have a lot of commonalities between those two parties. So they deal with those people as they are hostages. They neglect their rights.
Hussein Barakat's son, Ali Barakat, is also serving a 22-year sentence in Jao after being convicted on political charges in a separate case when he was just 16. Despite an earlier outbreak of COVID-19 at the prison in March and April 2021, the prison administration had still failed to distribute face masks or hand sanitizer to protect prisoners. Overcrowding in Bahrain's prisons is a long-standing concern which makes social distancing impossible. In early April, inmates at Bahrain's Jao prison protested against the lack of medical treatment and fearing for their lives after the death of another inmate. Prison authorities instead threw stun grenades, beating inmates with batons to force them back inside their overcrowded cells.
The inmates have been protesting about conditions of detention, in particular the lack of access to medical treatment. The sit-in began on 5th April, after a political prisoner, Aba Malala, died after reportedly being denied timely access to essential health care. The lack of health care in the overcrowded Bahraini prisons has been an issue for years, but has become a chronic problem during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Hossein Barakat's death could have been avoided had the Bahraini regime heeded calls to set free political prisoners so as to prevent the spread of the virus.
Victim Hossein Barakat hasn't been the first victim who passed inside the Bahraini prisoners. We have a lot of cases. We have martyr Karim Fakhrawi, who died in prison and because of torture. We have the case of Sayyid Qasim al-Sahlawi. Also, we have the case of martyr Muhammad Sahwan, who had like mostly 80 shrapnels in his head because of the riot police. There are a lot of cases of prisoners who passed away inside those notorious prisons merely because of torture, of medical neglection.
With overcrowded cells, unsanitary conditions, and a lack of preventative measures, this disastrous outbreak seems to continue and claim more lives of those whose only crime was calling for freedom and democracy.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
For decades, U.S. military operations have been contaminating the Pacific region with toxic substances, including plutonium, dioxin, and VX nerveagent, says John Mitchell, the investigative reporter for Okinawa Times. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Tim Sharrock, writer. This article is published under the heading Toxic Legacy of U.S. Military in Pacific. Stay tuned for more. John Mitchell, the investigative reporter for Okinawa Times, has spent years documenting the Pentagon's brazen use of the Pacific as a testing site and dumping ground for dangerous weapons. Wherever the United States military goes, it contaminates and damages the environment and human health, he says. He warns that the proposed U.S. military expansion in the Asia-Pacific is largest since the Vietnam War, will aggravate an environmental disaster caused by 75 years of American wars and intervention. The Pacific Islands have been militarized since the Second World War by the American military and are now the edge of the American Empire, he said. They suffered in the past and will inevitably suffer in the future. Mitchell's recent book, Poisoning the Pacific, the U.S. Military's Secret Dumping of Plutonium, Chemical Weapons, and Agent Orange, explores this largely unknown legacy. Based on hundreds of declassified U.S. documents obtained under the Freedom of Information Act and interviews with U.S. veterans and whistleblowers, it documents the Pentagon's use, testing, and storage of chemical, nuclear, and other weapons of mass destruction, WMD, in the Pacific, and the disastrous impact of its flawed handling and storage of such weapons. For decades, U.S. military operations have been contaminating the Pacific region with toxic substances, including plutonium, dioxin, and VX nerveagent, Mitchell explains in his introduction. Hundreds of thousands of service members, their families, and residents have been exposed, but the United States has hidden the damage and refused to help victims, he added. The dangerous lurch toward military confrontation in Asia underscores Mitchell's concerns. The U.S. Indo-Pacific Command recently unveiled to Congress that it is seeking $27 billion in additional spending to station additional troops and weapons to counter what it claims is a growing military threat from China. The plans, which also draw on $4.6 billion appropriated by Congress for its Pacific Deterrence Initiative, include a precision strike missile network on the island chain running from Okinawa to the Philippines, the first U.S. Marine base in the Pacific since the Korean War, a missile defense system on Guam, and a radar system on Palau in the Marshall Islands. The Pentagon is also seeking funds to reorganize the 27,000 Marines based in the Pacific region into small units into Guam, Japan, and Hawaii that can operate inside the range of Chinese rockets. The harm that could follow from this expansion can be seen in Okinawa, the focus of much of Mitchell's book. It houses 70% of the total number of U.S. bases in Japan, where 50,000 American troops make up the Pentagon's largest overseas contingent. Through his tenacious reporting, Mitchell has uncovered story after story about the use and misuse of WMDs on the island prefecture, which was occupied by the U.S. military after the bloody battle for Okinawa in 1945 and handed back to Japan in 1972. In 2011, Michelle was the first reporter to interview U.S. Air Force technicians on Okinawa in charge of the storage of nuclear weapons, which included over 1,200 warheads at Kadena and Naha Air Force bases, as well as at U.S. Army ammunition dumps in Chibana and Henoko. He also broke stories about the U.S. testing of biological weapons and its storage and transshipment of Agent Orange, the defoliant used over Vietnam on Okinawa. His reporting extends beyond the Cold War. Michelle uncovered the U.S. military's accidental use of depleted uranium rounds at an Okinawan live fire range in 1995 and 1996, its dump of radioactive waste into sewers beneath U.S. bases in mainland Japan in 2011, and hundreds of recent environmental accidents at U.S. bases on Okinawa that were not reported to Japanese authorities. His book also describes years of high decibel noise pollution from the American jets flying near residential areas in Okinawa. Such long-term exposure is a serious health risk that can cause heart problems, disrupt sleep patterns, and damage cognitive skills in children. One Japanese university study estimated that noise from Kadena was responsible for an average of 10 deaths a year, with 17,000 people suffering from disrupted sleep. The U.S. military presence on Okinawa is an environmental justice problem. That's what the American people must understand, Mitchell said. Earlier this month, the importance of U.S. bases to America's Pacific strategy was underscored when Japan's Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga was the first foreign leader to meet with President Joe Biden at the White House. In a joint statement, the two leaders affirmed their ironclad support for the U.S.-Japan military alliance and agreed that Japan would complete construction of a new U.S. Marine Air Base at Henoko in northern Okinawa as the only solution to replace the unpopular Futenma facility. But as Mitchell points out, the U.S. military is building the Henoko base, the scene of daily demonstrations upon a pristine coral reef. Their environment has been decimated by the American military, he said. The Pentagon, through U.S. Forces Japan, denies most of Mitchell's claims. The statement that the U.S. does not clean up contaminants is simply false, a U.S. FJ Public Affairs officer wrote in a lengthy email. The GOJ, that is, the government of Japan, has never indicated to the U.S. in any bilateral forum that the Okinawan environment has been decimated. The American response to environmental spills is some of the most aggressive in the world, the PA officer added. The health and safety of everyone in and around U.S. installations is one of our top priorities, and we take matters of environmental stewardship very seriously. Mitchell has also reported extensively on water pollution on U.S. bases. During 1960s, he said the water near Kadena was so contaminated that it literally could be set on fire. In his book, he documents 650 environmental incidents between 1998 and 2016 at Kadena, largely caused by leaks of fuel and firefighting foam. These incidents have ranged from small fuel leaks of only several liters that stayed on the base to large spills discharging tens of thousands of liters of fuel and raw sewage into local rivers, he writes. Military incompetence has repeatedly endangered local water. More recently, Mitchell documented severe water contamination in drinking wells around Yokota Air Base, the headquarters of U.S. Forces Japan, near Tokyo, where American presidents and other senior U.S. officials land when they visit Japan. In 2000, officials from the Tokyo Metropolitan Government found no evidence the pollutants came from inside the base. But Mitchell argues that Japanese government reports carry little weight because its officials are prohibited from entering U.S. bases to carry out inspections. The problem, he contends, is the U.S.-Japan Status of Forces Agreement signed in 1960. Thanks to this agreement, the American military does not need to clean up contaminated land, he said. They do not need to allow Japanese officials to inspect the bases. In contrast, in the United States, you can go to EPA webpages and find out what bases are contaminated with what. Asked about the SOFA clause that prevents Japanese officials from inspecting U.S. bases, USFJ responded with a qualifier. While the basic language of SOFA has not changed since its inspection, it said both of the U.S. and Japanese governments agree that the agreement works well to serve the interests of the two countries. In the in concluded, the commander of U.S. Forces Japan is designated as DOD lead environmental component for Japan and therefore will ensure U.S. military operations are carried out in a responsible manner that will protect the environment now and for future generations. Statements like that, along with the lack of U.S. press coverage, reflect the disdain on the part of the American elite towards Okinawa, Mitchell said. Most American newspapers don't report about these daily injustices to the people of Okinawa. They don't report about the contamination. They don't report about the weapons of mass destruction. To make the situation worse, the American military has dismissed the testimony of servicemen, saying they are mistaken or were lying, he said. So documents are vital.
Around the World with Reporters.
Shocking footage filmed on the 18th of June, Iran's election day, shows Iranian expats being attacked outside polling stations up and down the UK. Victims included women and the elderly, the perpetrators, supporters of anti-Iran terrorist groups, including the MEK, communists, and Shah royalists.
Videos released on social media show fanatic protesters hurling Islamophobic abuse and even physically assaulting voters in cities including Birmingham, Manchester, and here in London too.
One victim reached out to tell us about her ordeal.
As soon as I got near the embassy, I was wearing the hijab, obviously, and the crowd started roaring and screaming. And they got louder as they saw me, obviously, going to vote. Calling me names, calling my family names, cursing my mother, my father. I heard a rock hit the ground. I didn't look back because I was shaking at that time as well. One of them said to me, and funnily enough, the policeman was there, but obviously you couldn't understand Farsi. He's telling me if I had a knife, I would cut you in pieces right here, right now. I was so shaking with fear. Since then, I've suffered with anxiety since that day. I said to myself, I should have left. But I stood my ground. I said, why should I leave? And the people coming, I said, why are you calling me names? They said, we call you names because you deserve it.
Britain boasts about being a defender of democracy on the world stage. But these violent scenes suggest that the UK failed miserably to protect democratic rights of Iranians inside its own borders. Despite these attempts, Iran's election went ahead with President-elect Sayed Ibrahim Raisi coming out on top. Robert Carter, London.
It's the world's second most populous nation, and the figures of COVID-19 infection cases are rising on a daily basis. The cities are bustling as the country is picking up pace as the world's fastest growing major economies. But in all this hustle bustle, and race of survival, an important aspect of life is on stake, and that is mental health. The second wave of COVID-19 has altered the lifestyle of millions across India, who now are struggling in silence. Reports suggest more than 70% of those in the age group of 18 to 24 are suffering from some form of depression. Now, the COVID-19 pandemic has ignited the